Season 1, Episode 4, King of the Narrow Sea is over, but we are just getting started here on Post-Show Recap. Hello, everybody. Mike Bloom here to bring you pleasure to your house, not to be confused with a pleasure house. Let's not go spreading rumors here. Talk about the fourth episode of House of the Dragon. A very interesting episode indeed to get into. Of course, there's going to be a lot of talk about partners involved in all of this. Let me talk about my partner when it comes to the podcasting perspective for House of the Dragon, the great Grace Leader. Grace, how are you?
I am great. This is a wild episode and a lot happened and I'm excited to talk about it. So here we are.
There's this weird House of the Dragon magic and not of the, High Valyrian, Lord of the Rings-esque script written upon the fiery stone type of magic, where this show is somehow able to, much like that man in Flea Bottom, walk a tightrope of having like little occur, yet a lot occur at the same time, considering that the logline for this episode, bit of a spoiler alert of people somehow chanced upon this podcast, having not watched King of the Narrow Sea, is like, Daemon comes back, he takes Rhaenyra out for a line on the town, rumor spread, Otto gets fired. That's the episode in four sentences. Yet, it is this really, I'm going to say, enigmatic hour. Let me just say, and I guess this is where we're at a disadvantage for coming in right after watching the episode, I have no seven damned idea how I feel about this episode. Yeah. Where it felt at points, this is the episode so far for me that I felt I was the most like looking at my watch to be like, okay, let's sort of get a move on here. Lots of, one-on-one scenes and conversations and rumors being spread. Though again, on the other side, that is a bit of the point. And I think there is an audaciousness when it comes to both tone and I would especially say like darkness of material that I greatly do appreciate, even if admittedly, when it comes to the effectiveness that it has on me, I am still a little bit in and out, for lack of a better term, on. Grace, what did you think about this episode?
So I think this episode is really interesting. The reveal in the middle of this episode, which is the Rhaenyra and Daemon of it all, is really interesting as people who like read, being a book reader, the show is kind of billed as like the Daemon versus Rhaenyra show. That this is the succession crisis of Viserys's reign. There are two suitable candidates and here they are, and they will, they clearly we get the flashback of the necklace gift scene. They're friendly to each other and they clearly have like a relationship with one another, but it seemed like they would be pitted against each other. And that is not necessarily the case, as we see in this episode. That scene for me, I feel like what this episode had for me, it built a lot of tension. There's so much of this episode, and I don't know this exactly because I'm watching sort of just on my TV, but I presume that this one is either the second longest or it's longer than the premiere, and I don't know the exact timestamp on that, but it's pretty long. Like it comes in a little bit over an hour, I believe. And so I feel like, I don't know, that worked for me. I felt like this, especially as somebody who sort of knows a bit where we're going. I think the fun thing about being the book reader here, and they'll do it on the book club podcast, is that like it's written as a history text, so you don't always actually know if the reports are accurate, right? And this is, I love the thing that they said on the book club podcast, that the show is actually more accurate than the book, which is normally the other way around. And so we're getting, this is what happened. And it's, I just thought that this episode, I really liked it and thought, enigmatic is a really good word. I found it very it's just tension of looming, almost like a horror movie of sorts, that something not right is coming throughout this whole thing.
Yeah. Or someone.
Yeah. I think this is another example where I feel like episode one came in really strong and they said, remember what Game of Thrones was like at its worst, at its like most violent? Well, here it is. We're back. And I feel like there was this reaction, I think, after episode one, that people are either like, yes, this is what I loved, or people who are like, yeah, I don't think in 2022 I need this show in my life. I think I'll turn on Rings of Power when it comes on, right? And I think that we kind of went back to form a little bit. You know, certainly we can joke about, like, you know, he's trying to marry off his like 12-year-old daughter, you know, and so there was stuff in there. But I feel like this one again is like, you remember what Game of Thrones was like?
Yeah.
Just like, and so I think if people come out of this episode feeling the way you're feeling and perhaps being like, yeah, I don't think I need this on my like Sunday night, you know, the night before I go back to work on Monday morning, I think that's totally fair.
Absolutely.
I was really entranced, but I can see this being another very polarizing episode.
Yeah. And I think for me, it's a matter of even going back to, you know, that Emma death scene, it's a thing of, I wouldn't say like an isolated incident, but I do feel like there are moments of almost escape from those moments, even when you mentioned, right, the whole child bride aspect, or even last episode, right, of like, hey, marry this 2-year-old. Those feel like, you know, minute, 2-minute long things within the grand scheme of, okay, well, there's these other 58 minutes that you can watch. For better or for worse, this was the entire focus of the episode, which, again, I can really appreciate. Like, I absolutely love that. This show is really not pulling its punches.
No.
I would even, like, listen, I'll throw something out to be hopefully answered on the feedback show this week. Like, honestly, this may be one of the darkest storylines I've seen in the show's history, including Game of Thrones. And that is saying a lot, that there are these, like, big calamitous events like the Red Wedding, or even something like the sacrifice of Shireen, which I would also consider, like, a fairly dark act. But, like, seeing how it all falls out here, and especially the moral ambiguity around it, which, again, I really do appreciate. I think this is, it's taking such a hardline stance, ironically enough, by not really showing characters as, again, black or white, that I think, again, Game of Thrones didn't necessarily do all the time. There are, again, like, very good characters, very bad characters, then a lot of people in between. This was an episode where I do feel like nobody came off well. And now I'm starting to think back to like George R. R. Martin's words, right? Of like, there's no Arya Stark here. Everyone is doing complicated things. And again, I really appreciate that. I just think for me, it's whether it's like, okay, something that I necessarily either like felt I wanted to take in. I love that you compare it to a horror movie, because I hate horror movies. I hate having that tension personally. And I will say that there was certainly an unpleasantness that I said this all the time in Lost Down the Hatch. Like, I certainly appreciate it. I think I'm having a little bit of trouble saying I enjoyed it at the moment, but I think the more we get into it, the more I can sort of hopefully express the fact that while maybe the tone of it was something that I'm not exactly striving to get back to and watch, I can really dig into a lot of fascinating things that happen over the course of this hour.
Yeah, I think I said this in the preview show, but I think that, you know, I think as the show went along, the original Game of Thrones, and I'm interested to hear like LaTanya and Josh talk about this on the season by season comparison. Cause I feel like there certainly are like, even our good character, even the good characters that are like, who are supposed to be sort of like morally good or more on that side of the spectrum than anything. I feel like there were pretty clear divisions where the end of that, of episode one of the entire show sets up two siblings like sleeping together secretly and then chucking a child at the window. Cause he saw. And then in this one, I think what might also like hit, and it's very interesting. I think you and I were very appreciative to get to be, you know, getting to come on here right after the episode and give our reactions. I am so intrigued to see how this will play in terms of Rhaenyra being somebody who I don't think, you know, she's the one trying to pull Daemon in as he is sort of saying no more, and he walks out of the pleasure house, as they call it, and so. As somebody who I think very clearly has been the most sort of, this is our protagonist. This is our, you know, this is our girl boss, our princess boss. You know,
oh, there's no gatekeeping in this one. The gates are open in a manner of speaking this episode.
I think that she's sort of been like in the midst of all these people that people are either kind of ambivalent about, like in the form of Viserys. I think some people are either like super interested in the Viserys stuff, or I think Rob has been saying that, like, yeah, he's fine. He, you know, he's there. Otto, clearly people are getting a good hate in. And so Rhaenyra being sort of the fan favorite thus far, and then having this moment that I think will make people be like, I don't know if I'm rooting for the home team anymore. You know, this is ugly a bit. So I think it's really fascinating, and you know, to the point of like the George R. R. Martin quote about what this show is, that they're setting the tone for what this show is, you know, 40% of the way through.
Yeah, absolutely. So that being said, again, it's a good excuse for you to get in your feedback. At the time of recording this, we're seeing a lot of feedback already pouring in on our Discord channel. Lots of positivity towards it, which is exciting. Though we'll also see exactly, you know, how the scales perhaps balance. Let your voice be heard no matter what. And hopefully between Grace and myself, we are able to sort of represent some various opinions as well. Let's get into it. King of the Narrow Sea, but instead of SEA, it's more like SEX this episode, as we're going to talk about sex, baby.
Yes, we certainly are.
Well, we're going to start, though, actually, with something that perhaps, you know, implies the term confirmed coitus in the first place, Grace. We're going to get the Westerosi Bachelorette for a second. We get sort of what ends up being the impromptu tail end of Rhaenyra's campaign, essentially, to take in a bunch of suitors and to see who's correct. I mean, essentially, Grace, do you think these were like the limo entrance equivalents, where like they step forward and they do their old goofy routine and they see if they get the first impressions rose?
Yeah, I was trying to think of like whether, you know, and this is a little bit of when you're trying to suspend your disbelief for a show. The fact that they all are wearing their house colors, I guess that's what you would do, right? I guess probably in this time to like, you know, I'm so proud to have, you know, whatever emblem I have on my chest. Oh, we're a fish family, you know, like, okay, I got a big, I'm a Tully. But the procession of suitors and sort of calling back a little bit to like where she picks the knight as well. But this is a totally different thing. The one thing I was wondering is where they were. That would be something I would like to know, because it feels they eventually are going to come back to King's Landing. So I would like to know where they were. And also, it's another time jump, I believe, in terms of we have jumped forward 1 year.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Yeah, at least we have to measure this, unfortunately, by the babies that Alicent is kind of pushing out at this point, right? Because she was pregnant last episode. She has a child now.
In the play that we'll see later, he says a 3-year-old son. Last week we knew he was 2, so now he's 3. So we've jumped forward. I mean, I kind of wish maybe they were being a little bit more like I'm like playing Where's Waldo with the time jumps here. I'm like, oh, that seems to make sense. I think, you know.
And now I'm intrigued as we talk about the return of like the eponymous King in the Narrow Scene a little bit. Like, so did they eventually get news that like the crab feeder was gone and then Daemon was just hanging around there for a year and said, yeah, I think I'll come back now. I'm good.
So they don't say that, but I believe in the book, Corlys actually is the one who names him King of the, they kind of, the King of the Narrow Sea. They kind of imply that just like the people do it. I believe in the, it's like, kind of like a court, like he's like, God, and you could be the King of the Narrow Sea. And they do like rule there for a bit, I think is the idea, which is, and they, again, I think the time jump stuff is hurting the show slightly. I don't think it's not awful. It's not breaking the show for me, but every once in a while I'm like, oh yeah, the time jump's really, you know, this scene is happening now, you know, right. In terms of, but in this episode, it's like, he's basically saying, you know, he says, oh, now you've just left it unruled. Like, so Corlys must be there. He's like, nope, Corlys went back to Driftmark. He's like, so who's ruling? You left it like leaderless. It's just going to be a cot again. That's where we get the scene later. But and back to the procession. Yeah, it's fun. I don't know.
It's a good way of setting up again, like Rhaenyra's over this shit. That right. Like, yes, she and Viserys have this scene at the end of the last episode of like, you go off and marry whoever you want to. There's a big asterisk beside that, right? Which is like, whoever you want to amongst the teams of people that I have provided for you, all of whom you are probably going to reject. And yes, we just get a reminder of how Rhaenyra is not really into the courtly proceedings of it all. They're either too old or they're too young, or they're too young and they also kill hecklers where they're standing.
Yeah, I know there was a lot of debate about like would the tournaments really be that violent if these are like the best knights of the realm, like at a his son, the heir for a day's potential arrival, and it's like really just gonna kill some of the best knights in like a jousting competition, like that seems like a bad idea, and that this literally at a courting event, so that guy died, a Baratheon just died, so
Yeah, I mean, listen, again, it's similar to The Bachelorette, right? When, like, guys are getting in fights with each other, butting
heads. And they get stabbed in the stomach with a sword.
Yeah, sometimes they do. Look, there are those lost seasons that nobody likes to talk about. They're out there on the internet. The stabbing seasons of The Bachelorette. Rhaenyra says, shut it down. We're wrapping it up. we're heading home right now, and it's not a moment too soon as another person happens to be making a homecoming at the same time. Viserys is certainly feeling a certain mood, as he will the entire episode, not only seeing, you know, his daughter end her tour early, but to see a new version of Daemon walk back in, complete with, I think, the thing to do, Grace, his new do. What do you think about Daemon's short hair look here?
I like it. I think it looks good. Yeah, he's classy. He's grown up. You know, he doesn't need to let his hair down anymore. He's here. He's back to swear fealty to his rightful king. I like it. Daemon is essentially, you know, the Westeros' oldest troll. I'll just be like, yeah, I'm gonna walk in here with my. It's very similar to episode one where he sits on the Iron Throne and Harold Westerling is like, what is he doing? He's like, it's fine. It's a little joke.
Well, he's gonna walk in. He's gonna throw down the freaking crab feeder's hammer and be like, it's for your chair. He doesn't even call it a throne. It's like, oh, it's for your chair.
That's right.
Yeah, I really like it because. God, this is the most like Chad look I've ever seen in Westeros, right? Like he with the bleach white blonde look of the Targaryens, he has like throw a freaking cardigan over his shoulders and give him a croquet hammer and he's ready to go. He could use the crab feeder's hammers for that. He looks like such a freaking frat douche. And that is kind of honestly what he is personifying up to this point. And I love this. And this has been brought up actually in our Discord as we're talking by Zach, but this idea that I think coming in, to be honest, you look at Matt Smith and based on his characters, I'd assumed at least, okay, here is this like conniving, calculated, Machiavellian type that's going to try to scheme from within to take over his brother's throne. No, this dude is like brash, emotional, vengeful, like completely instinctual, like runs out into the middle of a field and hopes to just take as many arrows as he can to kill as many Triarchy people as he wants to. This is the least Matt Smithy Matt Smith character I think I've ever seen, and I absolutely love it.
Yeah, I have two older brothers, and I actually do think that they're, I mean, okay, God forbid I compare my brothers to Targaryens, but I am about to. I am very sorry to them, and I think my mom and dad. but my oldest brother, the firstborn, he's very nice. He's great. He's the best. He's so nice. And the other brother came and it was kind of like, can I have that thing? Can I have that toy you're playing with? And I was like, yeah, Drew, just let him have it. He'll be. And so my second brother is a bit more like, yeah, he sometimes is an attention seeker to a degree. I feel like there's a degree to which all Daemon wants in the world is somebody to pay attention to him at any time. And that's where I think a lot of this behavior comes of like, yeah, I will walk through this thing. I'll do it. And at the end, I'll swear fealty to you because like, yeah, that's actually like, you know, I think there's missing this line that like Daemon's actually kind of a family man. Like the necklace he gave. I mean, in this episode, he very much became a family man.
Oh, God.
I will say. But yeah, so yeah, and he's very much about Targaryen tradition, including having multiple wives and marrying within the family. So, you know, he's just doing his duty, Mike.
Yeah, exactly. But it's this thing of fitting the rules of duty and past precedent into like what he wants to do.
Right.
Right. Agreed. And it's such an interesting perspective because we'll get conversations in this episode actually coming up very, very soon in the episode, but we had it in other things as well, where Rhaenyra would complain to Daemon being like, you're so lucky that, you know, you're a man and I'm a woman. And he's like, well, I'm not much better because, you know, I'm in this position in the family. I have to do this and do that. And this is a guy that just, despite the fact that he is in a better position and is privileged, I think, compared to a lot of people, especially people within his own house, he still wants more. You know, the grass is always greener before it gets scorched by Caraxes. And so speaking of Caraxes, I think by default, he has to be the MVD, right?
He is the MVD.
He's the only alive dragon we see this episode.
Only alive dragon. We did see the giant dragon skull in the basement, but I don't think he counts.
Yeah, so as we mentioned before, he's going to give up his like Martha Stewart-esque Beechwood crown to Viserys to say, yeah, look, I got this fun nickname while I was out battling overseas, but like I've come home. I want to be with you. And Viserys gives him a nice brotherly hug. And there's a bit of a reception afterwards where it's clear that Viserys is not going to turn the other cheek for Rhaenyra right now, feeling that she has spurned, you know, the multiple chances that he has given her. What I will say, I thought this was a pretty dang good Allison episode for a character who, I'll be honest, has not had a very good run on the show so far. I would say either in terms of just like involvement with the plot, maybe interest as well. I feel like we got a lot of dimensionality to Allison, particularly in this episode, that definitely piqued my interest in the character.
Yeah, I think unfortunately it comes through some various scenes that, I mean, this is going to be, I think, the story of a woman who is, whether or not it's by her choosing, it is playing the game, sort of trying to do the things that her father wants and also now do the things that she, you know, is expected of her from for the king. And also just trying to like do all of that and maybe try to rebuild that relationship with Rhaenyra. I would agree. I think I've said that the Allison stuff, I like the storyline. I just wish we were getting a little bit more insight into Allison. And I do think that this episode does that at least better than previous episodes. So I'll give them credit there. And this moment where she offers up, like, would he like to see the tapestries? Like, there is nothing less in the world Daemon wants than to look at tapestries. And so Rhaenyra will go take a look at them, but not with Allison. She'll like sort of follow over after, you know. I love this dynamic. I think this is the dynamic of like the four of them standing around. I think was not a ton is being said, but it was very compelling. I thought you can tell that things still aren't perfect between Rhaenyra and Viserys, right? Especially, you know, go and choose a mate. Well, it's been a year. She has not picked anybody. Right. And then Viserys and Daemon trying to sort of like, you know, they clearly were like, not getting along super well. And Viserys is clearly, he is an appeaser. He likes to appease people. This is what he said last episode, that I get spurned because I try to make sure people are happy with what I'm doing. And he's trying so hard to just like please Daemon here and this thing. And then we get this moment, you know, and we'll get many lingering eye contact scenes between Daemon and Rhaenyra over the course of this episode. But this is really where it starts.
Yeah, I think the one corner that's missing from this main square of four characters is Allison and Daemon.
Yes.
I feel like for whatever reasons, just maybe due to their distinct separation, we don't necessarily know how these two relate to each other. But I was really grateful for this Allison and Rhaenyra scene in particular, because I think Allison's storyline in this episode is going to be like her, I think, recognition of what duty she has to fulfill as the queen, where, again, Rhaenyra is really going to vocalize this. She's going to do it more so to Daemon, but it really applies to her in general, right? About how one of the reasons why she's really pushing against this idea of being married off is that she saw her mother quite literally die in the pursuit of just giving birth to the next person in line for the throne. She will not succumb herself to the same fate. She refuses to fight on that battlefield, in a manner of speaking. And, you know, she puts it pretty curtly to Allison as well, right? How romantic it must be to imprison in a castle and made to squeeze out heirs. And I think that Allison, at least in the moment, does try to, like, hold it in. But at least we read from her facial expressions, especially when we have a little bit of a night call happening later on in multiple ways, that clearly this is an idea that I think she is co-opting as well. And I don't know if Rhaenyra is necessarily like getting a new idea in her head in this perspective, but I would say that I think Allison certainly agrees with it to some extent, that this ain't all it's cracked up to be. It's not good to be the queen.
But also, what else do you do now, right? I think there's a little bit of like, now you're in it. Like, there's no like real exit plan from this situation she's found herself in, right? And I do wonder, a character I feel like made such a presence early on, who has been missing for the last two episodes, is Rhaenys. And so
I guess she had probably fled with Corlys, right? It'd be kind of odd to leave her husband behind.
Yeah, I mean, their home is Driftmark. So she's presumably been in Driftmark maybe with Laena while Laenor has been fighting with Corlys. So, yeah, I mean, and this is a show that's kind of just centering us on King's Landing most of the time, unless, you know, we could have a cool fight or, you know, see a cool character. But I think in the same way that I really loved the scene between Rhaenys and Rhaenyra, where you can see this, like, you know, the Rhaenys sort of has this like, yeah, it'll never happen. Like a woman being queen, it will never happen. They'll burn the country before they ever let that happen. I feel like this is an interesting split, I think, in philosophy, in that Alicent has chosen a path that Rhaenyra very clearly doesn't want to go down and end up. So I think it's a very interesting relationship, and I'm excited to see how it continues to develop.
So Rhaenyra is then going to meet up with Daemon in like a little separate subsection of this little like gathering, right? And what I love about these two is that, look, we're going to talk about a very different use of tongue later in the episode, but I love the fact that they continue with these two speaking Valyrian to one another.
Agreed.
I could certainly understand, especially with like Americanized shows, right? This idea of like, okay, we can't do subtitles the entire time. I think that has genuinely gone away, especially with the bastion of a lot of foreign language shows, like a Dark, like a Squid Games, for example, that, yep. You know, hashtag subs, not dubs for life. And I think it works really well because it also does feel like a bit of like, I do not want to call it this because of what the circumstances are later on, but like a bit of a twin language, right? This idea yes. that they and only like a subset of the lower common folk end up speaking this really so casually. And so it's an ability for them to like communicate intimately with each other in front of mixed company. And I like the fact that this conversation basically happens mostly in Valyrian. I think it does segue eventually to you know, the common tongue. But I think it's a fun way that they regard each other after, let's remember that like these two have not seen each other since that egg showdown back in Dragonstone in episode 2.
Yes. I do think it's a fun like beat to their scenes that they speak in a language with each other that, yeah. I think the other folks you're talking about who speak it, the dragons, often I think get spoken to in Valyrian. And so, these are the two main dragon riders. We did see Sea Smoke last week, but you know, we didn't visit Laenor again, this week. He gets name dropped at the end of the episode. Mm-hmm. And so, they're the two dragon riders as well. Viserys doesn't currently ride a dragon because his dragon died. So I think that that's a fun, you know, beat to all of their scenes and does add a lot, I think, to, yeah, that they're the only ones who kind of understand each other in this weird way, you know?
Yeah, well, especially because Daemon is really going to invoke this idea. First off, you know, the idea of marriage, right, where Rhaenyra is going to complain to him like, oh, thank God you're here. It's been such a drag. I have had nobody to complain to. And Daemon's like, yeah, marriage sucked. It's only for politics. I have a wife. She's in the Vale. I never go visit her despite the number of times Viserys tries to send me there. You know, I wish I could do whatever I wanted to do. But he tells her, you cannot live your life in fear or you will forsake the best parts of it. And I think that is going to very much inform Rhaenyra's actions, in my opinion, for the rest of the episode.
I think that it's not just I wish I wasn't married. It's kind of like, you know, if you get married, they'll kind of get off your back for a bit. Like this never ends. Like this never ends of like, you have duty and honor and all this. But like, he's kind of like, I don't know, if you get married, then you can go do whatever you want. At least you're married. Like you could check that box out. It's almost like a thing he's saying you can use. You could be like, just get married to someone, literally anybody. And then just be like, well, I got married. I'm still going to do all the other stuff I want to do. You know, he's like, yeah, obviously we have to do it for like political gain, but you just do whatever you want, you know, the rest of the time. Who cares?
Yeah, exactly. And I'll show you that later tonight. Watch out for the bag of rags that's going to be in your chambers. It'll lead you down a whole night of debauchery.
Yeah, that one was like maybe a bit, you know, I get that they have to like get the message and you want it to be. But couldn't he just be like, I don't know, just the escape room of it all.
Yeah, yeah. The diagram I was very confused by. It was a little much. I guess he is really, and I guess good on him for banking on Rhaenyra being as much of like a smarty pants as she is able to figure out, okay, this is a map of like my own chambers. Okay, this is the secret thing that I press and I'm going to meet you here. I mean, who knows? She could have thought it was going to be some sort of brigand and like bring a knife and stab the hooded man that's standing in front of her when she goes around that dark chamber. But he really just set about a pretty complicated plan to get her out for the evening.
Yes. It felt very escape roomy. It was not the only one I watched on TV this past week. So I was like, you know, the secret map that like leads to the hidden door in your bedroom that leads you all the way to the worst part of the city. We did get, there is a couple quick notes that like, the Corlys Velaryon is potentially going to wed Laena to someone for a ruler in Braavos to create an alliance, which very much worries the small council. So we get a note of that, and we do get this quick scene of the baby has been born. And this is a thing of like the show. I feel like one thing it's doing, I don't know, I hope it's fun for other people, but I know the book readers, I think, are having fun of being like, oh, that's that person. But that is Helena Targaryen, who they do not name drop in the episode. Literally the only thing that happens is she's crying. So I believe that's Helena, a daughter that they had, I believe. But yeah, we get that before we get our night out on the town.
It is interesting. We didn't even talk about this at the top of the podcast here, but odd timing, in my opinion, that there's all these conversations about succession, right? And like, especially babies being born and how they fall into it with the recent news of Queen Elizabeth II's passing. A very different type of dramatics, I would say. There's certainly some dark deeds, especially involving like the Prince Andrew of it all. But still, like, very interesting timing, considering everything that's happening in our real world. But yeah, especially with the Lord Corlys stuff. He is not in this episode, but his presence is certainly felt, much like Daemon was, you know, last episode a bit, where now it's almost like with Daemon back, like now Corlys is the new Daemon of like, oh, here's this troubled child. What's he doing now? He's trying to marry his son off. Like, he's trying to make a grab for power. And they basically imply, right, that like, if he brokers this deal to marry off his daughter, they're going to kind of have to offer up Rhaenyra, which Viserys is going to eventually do, though I think with a bit more malice to it than initially thought.
Yeah, I was really intrigued because there's some stuff in the book about how this sort of relationship comes to be. And I think coming out of last episode where he basically says, marry whoever you want. And then by the end of this episode, he's basically going to say, actually about that, like if you didn't get married, you had a year, you didn't do it. So I need you to marry this particular individual. And so I think a lot of us last week were wondering how we would get from point A to point B there. We didn't get Laenor in this episode. I'm hoping we get a little bit more from Laenor next episode. Yeah, but it seems like, they need to appease the Valyrian, the House of Valyrian in some way.
All right, well, let's go out, Grace. We're not in Flea Bottom because we are touring this, like, absolutely bustling community, which is odd because, like, I don't know, I'm thinking back to episode one and Damon's probably like, oh, man, if I had my gold cloaks, I'd bust everyone's heads open right here, right now.
3 years ago. That's 3 years ago. You can't expect that. If you've been hanging out on Driftmark and he's been elsewhere, he was on Dragonstone. Yeah. You can't expect that, like, everything is nice and clean. And actually, I believe that there's probably a certain part of Flea Bottom that Daemon is very happy remains exactly as it is, as we saw tonight.
All right, gentlemen, burn everything to the ground except the pleasure houses. We'll leave them standing as a reminder of what I could take from
a tightrope walker. If you could keep them, woman with no eyes, if you could keep her, that would be great. This is Daemon's,
I'm a real effed up vision planned of me, the woman with no eyes, the man eating fire. I've got a whole thing in mind.
That's right. Yeah. Daemon has an aesthetic that he wanted to maintain. Yeah.
Yeah. So Rhaenyra's pulling an Arya here, right? Or I would say maybe more so like a Princess Cirilla from The Witcher, where she is like donning civilian clothes, wandering around essentially alongside Daemon, who also kind of just resemble a bit of Geralt in terms of his like no longer long white hair, but essentially, you know, we get sort of two separate sections here. I guess we'll get the Allison and Viserys stuff out of the way, I would say, first before we get to the more high profile stuff. Allison is going to visit her husband and she is going to like sponge bathe his wounds in private. It's interesting because they make a very adamant choice here not to show their conversation. At first I felt a little robbed of like, no, I really like this dynamic in the first episode and the second episode. It's one of the reasons why he picks her for, you know, a partner. What happens? And then we see what happens later, which is essentially she's a booty call. He sends a messenger to say you up to come over and essentially hopefully produce a third child. And I think it shows that we don't need to see their conversation because it's clear their conversations are not nearly as deep as they were, you know, back in the first couple of episodes.
Yeah, this, you know, there are some moments throughout this episode that, you know, he will say, like, you have a far kinder touch than the rest of them do, right? It's like he gets his bath. She, like, leaves them, escorts all the other servants out of the room. And there's a moment later where it's like when she's talking to him, she has like Hanley up. She's like, yeah, I think this, like the intrigue of Allison here is like, how much does she want to do this? I think the big question on the board was like, does she like Viserys, or is she just doing this because her dad basically was like, as Viserys is going to tell Rhaenyra, I need you to go marry this person. I was like, I need you to go marry the king, please. If you could do that, that would be great. And so is there real love in there or not? And I think out of this episode, I think that what's interesting is it's the moments that we see that are very clearly, this is not fun for Allison. There's not much, you know, she's not as happy as some other people are to be engaging in the activities that people engage in this episode. And yet I think it's also the episode that, because this episode is such, you know, an exploration of, again, Rhaenyra, you know, wanting to hook up with her uncle, that everything is morally ambiguous. And because of that, I kind of, I think, choose to believe that in there is love for Viserys. Even if it's not, like, oh, this is my one true love, right? It's like, well, I'm in this situation. Can I be something for this man? And do those give her more joy than the other ways in which, like, he would like her to be there for him? So it's interesting, I think, that in this episode where I think she is sort of treated by Viserys in sort of the grossest way we've seen him treat her, is also the episode that I think I see that, like, there is love there, even if it's not, like, you know, soulmates, you know, type love, you know?
Yeah, I don't disagree. I just, to a point you made earlier, wish we had seen more of it. And especially, it's come to light, I saw on Twitter that there were a couple of deleted scenes, apparently from episode 2, that were all Allison stuff. It was like, Allison on the day she was going to be read to Viserys. I think there's like an Allison Rhaenyra scene after he declares that he's going to marry her. And I would have really liked to see that for multiple reasons. First, I'm a little confused as to why they didn't make it into the final episode, because as far as I know, HBO is like, yeah, you make your episode however the hell long you want to make it. We're not necessarily budgeted, you know, only for an hour with commercials or anything like that. But I think it provided some much needed perspective as to your point, like, how does she feel about Viserys? I think the conclusion you're drawing is logical from my perspective, but the fact that we have to draw the conclusion in the first place does leave me a little wanting, you know, especially considering how much time has passed. You know, I would love to know, how did she feel about him back when they were about to be wed versus how does she feel now? And I thought that could have been an interesting trajectory to chart, but it does seem, at least in this moment, I do agree with you that I think Allison has a very good heart. It's how she wound up in this situation in the first place. It's something that I think Rhaenyra will exploit a bit later on. And so I do agree with you that I think she has to have at least some attachment to the king. I do not think it is as transactional as, you know, it may come across initially. But I do think the bloom has fallen off the rose a bit. The 7-year itch is happening. You know, the honeymoon period is certainly over, especially, you know, when Rhaenyra's words are probably ringing through her ears as, you know, Viserys is looking to make baby number 3.
Well, she's alone with Helaena, right? Like, she's alone with the baby who's crying, right? We get that scene's in there to your point of like, gosh, why did they cut that stuff? They are very intentionally about what they're putting in the show. And so we see that scene of like the baby's crying. She turns around, she's alone in this tower. And so there's that. And also I think the scene, like the sort of like, you know, the reception after Daemon gives up his crown, when he kind of makes fun of the fact, like the thing that she suggests to go do. So like, I think the idea that like, the Mike Bloom is off the rose. I think is accurate. I think that like, yeah. I think there was like a vision of like, what, you know, it's like, well, oh my gosh, what would it like to be queen? You know, like that could be fun. And it just like has not been that fun.
No. Yeah. Like she says, like people don't regard her as Allison anymore. Right. She has no friends. Right. All she has to do is like essentially take care of her children, go to her queenly duties, but like not be able to gallivant about with Rhaenyra, especially considering how strained their relationship is. And again, I'm very happy that we got that perspective, you know, later rather than nothing at all. Speaking of perspective, let's now go back to Fleabottom. Grace, it's time for a show as they are putting on a nice little, it's actually interesting. Going back to the Crown once again, I remember there's a scene where Prime Minister Harold Wilson, I think it is, goes to see like a comedy show that lambasts him. And Damon is going to take her on a tour of Flea Bottom. And initially you think that like this is kind of the intention, right? Is that they are, of course, much like, you know, your SNLs of the day, mocking those that are in power. In this case, they are talking about specifically this idea of like, yeah, Rhaenyra and Daemon are technically, you know, battling for power, but it's probably going to be the baby at the end of the day. He's the baby. Gotta love him. And Daemon basically uses this to tell Rhaenyra essentially like, yeah, your deepest fears are true. You could sit on the Iron Throne, but no one would actually want to respect you just because of, you know, what gender you are.
Yeah, and so I think this is an interesting shift from, again, what I think a lot of people thought the show was going to be if you didn't read the book, which is we shifted from, like, and the joke was sort of after the end of episode one that like, oh, well, Viserys named Rhaenyra, you know, heir, so I guess the succession crisis is resolved, which, it is not really like Daemon is not going to, I mean, he could try to be key, but like, you know, in terms of where we are, very low likelihood that like Daemon is named heir, right? So, so we're past that. And I think Daemon is sort of, as he's like bringing Rhaenyra down to, you know, the common people, this is what, you know, and they do have this like back and forth. And she says like, it doesn't matter what they think. And he says, it actually does matter what they think. Like, yeah, like we make decisions, but like you can't like spurn, if you spurn everybody, that won't work. Like, what are you going to rule over essentially? But he's showing her like, yeah, look, like it's not like at one point I thought it was going to be me. It's not me. I was pretty upset about it, but look, it's not going to be you either. Like, look, they're saying it's going to be Aegon, not you. And it's a little bit of like, well, I guess we're in this together now. Like, you know, again, to the point of like, yeah, we're the two people who are not going to be heirs. Like, sorry. A little bit to what like Rhaenys was telling Rhaenyra, but from her uncle.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also think that his ability to, again, he sits upon his own chair or throne in a manner of speaking, so he's not exactly a voice of the people, but I think being with the Gold Cloaks for a little while, like, I think he has a bit more of a perspective as to what the word on the street is, where I think he's a bit more allowed to be believed in the fact that he has to show her this to really illustrate, like, yeah, listen, your dad might tell you that, and even he does in this episode, that he refuses to, like, denounce Rhaenyra as heir because he does not want to break the realm apart, but, like, you're actually listening to people at this moment. They're not really regarding you as the heir right now. Anyway, right. Like, it comes down to bloodline, bloodline, bloodline. There are enough purists out there that are just going to look at that three-year-old child and say, oh, yeah, that's the new king. Any thoughts about the show itself? I have to say, to which heir might the chair bear is like, that's a perfect line, in my opinion. So kudos to whoever wrote that.
It's very good. I always like this. I think that it can feel, I mean, I think we've seen a lot of this stuff. I mean, Game of Thrones did it. Joffrey had the retelling. He like brought all of the dwarves out to make fun of Tyrion. So we've seen this type of,
and
like,
and there was also in Braavos, right? Where like, I think it was more so, I think they did it more, I think, in the books than in the show, but that was where like Arya, right, was tasked with killing the woman who played Cersei, I believe.
Right. And there is, there is this bit in the Thor movies, a recurring bit of like Matt Damon showing up. And so, yeah, it does feel a little bit like it's tropey, but also like, you know, storytelling has been passed.
Matt
that, right?
Damon Targaryen.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, this is instead of Affleck Targaryen.
What if they actually did the play?
That would have been
Damon
good.
The character was played by Matt Damon.
That would have been good. If Matt Damon would just like agree to play all just like his only roles moving forward are just like fictionalized historical plays of like the events of whatever show he's in. That'd be great. But yeah, like storytelling has been around. This is how storytelling happened at the time, you know, like, you know, presumably not a bunch of people in the land can read. So you go watch a play, you know. And so I think it's fun to sort of get this thing, because I think as we watch, you know, the like high drama of the court intrigue, the palace intrigue, it is fun to like look at like what these like lowborn folks are like saying. The only beat that I think is missing, and it gets referenced in the play, is Rhaenyra has a nickname, which is the Realm's Delight. And which is supposed to be that she's like, she's a young, beautiful woman. She's like, people really like her. And I feel like the only thing that this show has is I wish that we were maybe in some way getting a little bit of that, because it's not, that's not super clear. And that it, this is full, yeah, like tell and not show, right? Of saying like, she's the realm's delight. We have seen nothing to know that like, this is the only, these are the only commoners we've really seen interact with her or like talk about her. And it's basically, yeah, well, she's not going to be, she's not going to, they're making fun of her. She's not going to be the queen. Right. So I would like that to be touched on a little bit more, but there's only so much time in an episode, Mike.
Well, again, that's the argument I'm just selling, but I think that
I know
it's a good point, but I think it's very purposely done, right? That
agreed.
This is a very blinders on perspective of the court going on at the time. And while it does deprive us of maybe the populist opinion about things, it does allow us to really just like put our nose to the grindstone with the everyday activities of these people. Speaking of everyday activities, it's time. Let's rip off the Band-Aid. Let's go into the pleasure house here.
Can I give you, there's one beat before they go
oh,
to
please.
The pleasure.
Oh,
that's
please.
A very,
yes.
And I think again, this is the show is not doing a super good job of like it feels like you need to rewatch these episodes like a bunch of times to hit some of these beats. And it's only because I am sitting there like taking notes that I feel like I'm like catching some stuff, which is she runs into Harwin Strong, who is the son of Lionel Strong.
Who that was. Okay.
Yeah. So she says, oh, Harwin. He has a great name. He has an A+ nickname, Mike.
Yes.
He is Breakbones because he breaks people's
because
bones.
He doesn't drink his milk.
Yeah, that's right. And so she runs into him and he covers for her. And so I'm just going to like plant a little flag there that is a thing that happened in this episode.
Interesting, because yeah, we'll get later about like the little sparrow, right, in a manner of speaking, that's going to tell Otto about everything that went down. Would you imagine that Harwin Strong might have been another presumptive witness if were there be a case about this?
Certainly could be. You would notice that last episode his brother was the one who was mingling with the ladies because he didn't go hunting. So while Lionel Strong seems to be a strong confidant to the king, it seems that perhaps his children perhaps are, you know, they don't, yeah, there may be a little bit more going on. Literally, he's hanging around Fleabottom. So,
yeah, exactly.
Know? Yeah.
There weren't any other gold cloaks. Like, this dude was just walking around like, wait a minute, what are you doing here? That's the better question.
That's right.
So we go into the pleasure house here. And before we get to the moment, I do want to like stop down briefly about the role and thematic nature of sex in this show, because I am very much, God, it's weird to say that I'm into it, but I really enjoy, at least initially, right, like the intention that Damon claims this trip is about, right? He basically tells her / opens her eyes up to this idea of, in here, like, you know, the women are able to get what they want as well as the men. You know, it's not all around the world that women are subservient. You can have what you want to. And in some respects, the woman who is worth a hundredth of what you are is 100 times more free than you are. And we'll certainly talk about this idea, right, of like being chaste and maidenhood and what it means to like be quote unquote defiled in a manner of speaking. But I think it's a really interesting perspective from Damon, considering that he is very much speaking to, I think, Rhaenyra's perspective of she is right now seeing herself as livestock that is essentially being, you know, bartered with and bargained with and used. Eventually, she sees it as an inevitability of like, I'm going to have sex. I'm not going to enjoy it because it's only done to produce a child with someone that I do not like. And what Damon is essentially showing her is like, no, you just got to open your mind because there is an entire world outside of the Red Keep where you can enjoy these types of things as you're meant to do.
Yeah, this is the scene that I felt was like very tense. Like if the music here is like very, this is where I felt like horror movie-ish a little bit in the sense of there's a little bit of the expression that Rhaenyra has on her face as she's like walking through and seeing everything that's happening and like seeing what Daemon has brought her to and like exposing her to a degree is very interesting when you contrast it to the like the duty of picking a husband at the beginning of the episode, that she's bored. She is over it. And she has this like sly little grin of like, look at this place. Look what is happening. Look at it.
Look at what those two people are doing.
Yeah. That is like intrigue, I think, of like this world. And yeah, I think Daemon is trying to like show her what you can do. I think the stuff about Daemon being the second son in a royal family that is literally like, you know, they say they're as close to gods because they have dragons, right? Like there's, you know, but then not really getting anything out of it. And so, yeah, where would he look to like have power and control and do what he wants to do? Because he's been like, you know, you're from like the strongest blood in the history of the world. Like I can do whatever I want. And right now I want to come to the pleasure house with my niece. So,
yeah. So we have to talk about this. So I will admit, again, my background is that I am currently in the midst of reading Fire and Blood up mm-hmm. to the reign of King Viserys. So I don't know anything about what happens within this dynasty. And maybe I'm a bit daft here, Grace. I was shocked. I think it's just because the relationship that I saw between them was much more sibling-like. But then I guess you had to remember it's the Targaryens, where even Daemon's going to mention, right, Aegon the Conqueror, arguably the first great Targaryen, married both of his sisters and took them as wives. But I just never saw that specific aspect happening. Now, I think what it's going to lead me down a certain path later is that, like, I don't even know if, like, Rhaenyra or Daemon even felt that certain way. Maybe that's my hot take, is like, I don't know if this is a romance that has been simmering for a long time, but I think it is certainly something to open up a door. I think actually what she actually carries on much more with Kristen Cole, I think, is much more passionate than the brief dalliance she has with Daemon here.
Yeah, this scene is, yeah, I knew it was coming to a degree. I knew it was coming. And it's, yeah, it's pretty wild, even if you know. And so it's wild. I've lost my train of thought, Mike, because it's like having to like talk through the two of them. Yeah, I think, you know, what I was going to say, if you go back, I think what the show has done very cleverly is, I think if you went back and rewatch episode one, if you would look at that scene of giving the necklace, I think you can see what's like the hints of this coming, I think, have been there in their relationship. Mm. Except that they also, I feel like, hinted a lot of scenes in episode one specifically, and a little bit into episode two, of Alicent and Rhaenyra. And yeah, I feel like
horny for everybody? What we're supposed to take away here?
I mean, seems to be the case. But I actually think that relationship, and because there was some stuff with like the aging them down and up, Alicent and Rhaenyra specifically, to have them as like these friends, and people were definitely reading into that. And I think even the actors have said, like, yeah, that's like not unintentional, like, you know, to a degree. And so I do think that it was a little bit of a magician's trick, I think, a little bit, to, if I'm like basing this off your reaction, Mike, to think that, like, I think the book readers were like, I know where it's going. And I think the folks who didn't, I think it's, you know, kudos to the show, I think, maybe, or maybe not, because I think, you know, for some people, perhaps it was the bridge that they were on. It could be a bridge too far when they were in Dragonstone. So, yeah, it's very, very interesting. We'll see. But I kind of feel like they, like, yeah, look over here for a second. And it's like, surprise, the uncle and the niece. But it's actually Daemon, I think, it's very interesting, who, like, is going to resist it and not let Rhaenyra do it any further and storm off.
Well, can we talk about that? Yeah, because, like, what do we read of this? And again, this goes back to my idea that, like, I do not think it was a romantic feeling, at least not from Daemon's end. This was just very much like a lark of a moment. And then he's like off to do the next thing, you know, wake up in Meseria's arms, essentially. But is it a matter for him of like, oh no, I've gone too far? Is it like I don't really want to do this? What read did you have of Damon's choice to back away when she really starts leaning into it?
I think it's that point of, I think I've gone too far, which is kind of hilarious that I can immediately be like, well, I guess Damon kind of made at least a good decision here. Like, maybe I should stop kissing my niece. Because I think he knows his brother. He knows his brother extremely well. And I think that all of the things he's done so far, again, so much of it is just for attention, is that when he steals the egg, because Viserys isn't even pregnant. So that whole thing is just to get Viserys to look at him. And I think what's happening here is, I actually think as he's doing it, I think that there's a chance that what he is thinking is, oh my God, it's actually like kind of realer than I thought maybe it would be. And I need to stop, because this is bad. Because he's going to like put up the bravado later of like, this is the reason why you should let me do it.
Yeah. But Allison's going to clock him right accurately. So of like, no, he's exaggerating about it because he knows it bugs you.
Right. That I think that as much as he wants to get under the skin of Viserys, because it's the only way that Viserys ever pays attention to him, even this one is perhaps too far, and he will be proven right in that by the end of the episode.
Yeah, so it's like a rare moment of like insight from him, but to your point, there is like, there's still a bit of a bridge that has been crossed, but I totally co-sign you said. I mean, Daemon Targaryen is a guy who does not look before he leaps flies. I think he's very much like, I'll jump into something and I'll figure it out as I go along. And so I think it very was much just instinctual for him to do this. Maybe it was the pheromones of the pleasure house. Now, when it comes to the Rhaenyra side of things, though, what is your perspective? Do you think it is her capitalizing on feelings? Do you think it's more so for her like being swept up in the moment?
I think that she has always, I think what they try to tell you, and actually the book says this a little bit more, that she always got along with Damon, and that she was always very close to Damon. Not implying anything when that until what we're going to get here, essentially. And actually, like, interesting, the book is almost, because we'll get to the Kristen Cole stuff, but the stuff in the book actually like explores kind of the idea that like what he was doing was like training her to go and like pursue Kristen Cole is sort of the way that the book like notes this stuff, that they he was like essentially being like, here's how you're going to go and get Kristen Cole. And I actually think this is a very clever way to have done this information that's in the book. And again, the book is just like, the show is taking these small, very small snippets, like sentences at a time, with and making these huge meals out of them. But I think that Rhaenyra, the thing about her is that, well, she is a Targaryen, so she has this like, she's hot-blooded. I think with her, she is naturally good at these things in a way that Viserys, Viserys has shown that he is not exactly like naturally a strong leader. And I think that there's this idea that like, as Daemon is like being like, look what you could have, she kind of, I think, gets swept up in the idea of like, you know, getting to explore it with him in that moment. And so I think it's much more like, you know, I think that she's too smart for it to be anything other than sort of like, I think, there's been something there. They are Targaryens, you know, and it's just like, all right, yeah, this is what I want right now, because you said I can have anything I want.
Right. That's the thing too, of like, okay. And maybe it's a bit of being swept up in the moment and almost being like punch drunk now and all this new information. But look, his rejection will lead her into, in my opinion, the arms of the OTP. Here she comes, knock, knock, knocking on the door to say, Kristen Cole, come in. I have your helmet. And listen, I appreciate a lot about this scene in many ways. Like the passion that's invoked, the pure like ecstasy, for lack of a better term, on Rhaenyra's face, especially when put up against just the pure coldness in Allison's, similar scene of passion. But what I adore about it, Grace, is how many jokes have we endured over the years that medieval pop culture has existed, right? Of like, well, good luck having sex because it'd take like 2 hours to get through all your armor and all your layers. And like, they actually did it. Undid the gauntlets. They put the armor very courteously on the ground. And I, again, as many comments as there might be about perhaps the show sometimes being a little bit slow and ticking its time, like, I kind of love them acknowledging the realism and, to a point you made earlier, a very different type of tension there.
So what I love about this is another thing that's talked about in the book. And it's this is very much the thing that I think when people were saying, I'm so excited for the show because what they're going to do is they're going to take this historical text and it's all like, what is the situation that happened here? Like who, you know, and the fact that we sort of get to see it unfold. And what I think that this scene does really well. This is another one where, you know, different emotions than walking through Flea Bottom, but it's slow. It is really slow. And what I think it does is Kristen Cole is consciously choosing every time Rhaenyra goes to take off another piece of the armor, you know, okay, I'm going to take off this one. Okay, I'm going to take off this one. He's looking at the door. Like, should I do this? I do want to do it.
Yeah.
But he has so many times to basically say no, and he doesn't. And so there's very little words in this scene as well. It's a lot of, I say this on Poster Grips Theater a lot, but we critique or compliment the face acting of it all, which is how well can you just emote with your face? And Rhaenyra, I also love, she comes from Flea Bottom and then in the Pleasure House, and she comes here and she is such, like, I don't mean to like infantilize her degree, but she is being like, she stole his helmet, right? And she's like taunting him. She's being very like, school, she's teasing him, right?
That's they're very much like, oh, well, if a girl's being mean to you, it means that she likes you,
right? And in this case, it's true. And she's like, you know, playing with, and I love the moment. I think the moment is very well done of the time where she moves it out of the way and then kisses him. But I just think that the length of this scene is to basically say he's not supposed to do this. He wears a white cloak. He's in the book, so he is not allowed to have a partner, a la the Jamie Lannister of it all, that he chose to give up all land and claims to protect the king, and he is sleeping with the king's daughter. And so I just love, it's not that it's fun, that it's not just that it's like, the taking off the armor. I loved that as well, of just that, like, oh my God, how much stuff you have put on, but also that it was so conscious for Kristen Cole. This is not a oops, that happened. This is so conscious. Yeah.
Well, especially the fact that, they do this first, like, she does a test kiss almost, right? Where she just kind of falls into it and sees how she responds.
Yes.
Which, again, I think this idea of consent, which is very much a hot button issue in the world of Westeros, I think is really interestingly broached in this scene where he does then sort of, like, toe the line of it. And again, it goes to show that even someone like Kristen Cole, who is where his morals are supposed to be as white as the cloak that he's wearing, is still like, sometimes I just need to, sometimes you just need to break the rules a little bit. And again, I'm shipping these two crazy kids. Yeah. That scene, it was very beautiful in a manner of speaking, especially to see the smile on Rhaenyra's face, a smile that we have not seen. Well, honestly, we did see a smile on her face when she saw Caraxes fly overhead, but now we know that might have some stuff baked into it. But I think besides that, she has had such a miserable time, specifically since like the days of episode 2, right? When she was kind of throwing her weight around as the new heir apparent. Like, it seems like for the first time, she feels like she is truly taking a hold of her own identity, not just being defined by the heir apparent or, the delight of the realm or the king's daughter, but as Rhaenyra Targaryen. And I think that it's a moment where, and look, we'll see. This may not be the last time. It might become a pastime, to quote Hamilton. Mm-hmm. And this might end up being a Myronese knot in and of itself and how complicated it becomes. But at least like this first, brief knocking of boots, I think is just a really breakthrough moment for the character. We talked about the baptism by fire, last episode and how that changed this character. But this is a very different breakthrough in and of itself.
I think Kristen Cole thus far, I think there are people who have enjoyed him on the show, but I think he's very much been like, yeah, he's the good looking Dornish knight. You know, that's what he's been so far. And this is, I think, the most fleshed out we get. So I'm excited again, as we're like, we're giving our first reactions. I'm excited to see the reactions to this in particular, like, yeah, people shipping them together. But I mean, like, I, you know, disappointed, but it does feel bad. You know, this is very like, you know, the OC, One Tree Hill, all these shows where like, if Kristen Cole finds out that she was like, well, yeah, I did come to you after my uncle said we weren't allowed to hook up. That could be bad.
What thou said. It's like shooting a crossbow arrow.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's interesting though, because, you know, what other also complicates the issue is we'll talk about this later on is like, you know, Rhaenyra is lying through her teeth a bit as well of like, yes, well, don't worry. I'm still a maiden. I didn't have sex ... with my uncle. I still had sex though. So it's interesting in that she's obviously going to obscure that. And I have to imagine that's going to come out of the woodwork eventually. And like, that would arguably be now, while I think the idea of a Rhaenyra Daemon dalliance would like betray Viserys the most, this would like betray the realm the most, considering that this would be more of a literal law breaking than just a like, hey, these are the Targaryens, they do these things.
Yeah, there's one of the things that happens when Aegon the Conqueror comes in, he had already like, he had married his sisters already, like part of this whole story is that the three of them conquer Westeros, and there's this very big issue that happens next when Aegon dies and Aenys the first I was gonna call him Aenys, I believe there's a storyline, but like he wants to marry his sister, and the realm's trying to figure out like, yeah, like I know that the first king married his sisters, but like, we don't have to do that one again. Like, wouldn't it be better if you had like a potential match with someone? And so some people that did still happen, and will happen in the future of like, yeah, Targaryen.
That's a big storyline for Jaehaerys, right? He's like, but I want to marry my sister. Like, no, don't do it.
Don't do that. That's bad. That's a bad idea. And so, they're like, you know, this is all about tradition stuff, you know, Kristen Cole being a white cloak, you know, is that potentially more scandalous than a Targaryen match, because every once in a while it's like, they did it. Targaryens, they married their siblings again. All right, cool. Yeah.
I want to dope briefly upon, it's going to be a very brief scene, but hey, remember Missaria?
Yeah.
She's back and she's pissed. Because, I mean, I guess the implication, right, is like when he goes to fight these battles in the Stepstones for years at a time, that like Missaria's not there. I don't know if she would be staying at Dragonstone or if she goes back from when she came in King's Landing. She's there now. You know, she ends up taking Daemon in, whether I'm assuming he ends up just like stumbling back to her doorstep in his drunken state at the end of the night. And it's interesting in that, like, when he comes to, he doesn't even see her or recognize her, right? He just calls her a common whore. And then once he sort of realizes who he is, he tries to recoup. But she has, as she said, right, like, had her taste of the good life. She is no common whore. She has experienced what it's like to be, like, a displaced prince's paramour. And now she doesn't want to go back to what she had before.
Well, I mean, that scene on Dragonstone becomes very heartbreaking when she says, when she confronts him about lying about getting married and having a baby, that she was pregnant, that she's like, I'm not here to play your game. I want it to be free. And the fact that he returns to King's Landing and ends up in Flea Bottom and she ends up in the room is not a great sign that she is a free woman, right? To some degree, whether she chooses to do that, but also like my understanding would be like she does it so that, you know, to make a living, right? Is the thing that she can do. So yeah, not great news probably that like he wakes up to her, for her, I think. Yeah.
All right, so let's get into it. The telephone hour, Westeros edition. So we see the previous night. Game of Phones, exactly. Unfortunately, a lot of bad stuff on the line as Owen is going to come to Viserys with some discomforting news. And I love how this is going to bookmark at the end of the episode, right? When Viserys has some discomforting news for Owen as well. But here he's essentially going to say that he had somebody tip him off that Rhaenyra was spy in a pleasure house with Daemon. And it's a very interesting scene. You talk about the tension again, where like, it's Viserys is not dumb. Okay. Like, he understands what the implication is, but it is such a big accusation that he is forcing the hand of the king, assumingly his best friend, right, to like have to say it just to make sure that you are saying what I think that you are saying. And yes, indeed, that they are coupled up. Viserys immediately dismisses it as gossip. You know, he is going to throw out an accusation that he's going to eventually come to as a bit of a conclusion by the end, thanks to someone like Rhaenyra. This idea of your designs are obvious. Are you so willing to have your blood on the Iron Throne that you're willing to destroy my own? But it's very clear from Paddy Considine's face as Otto walks away that, like, he clearly doesn't believe the denials that he's putting out there.
Yeah, what I liked about this scene is, while we've learned that Otto has, you know, he's sort of the little finger of House of the Dragon to a degree, that he's plotting and scheming, but that, you know, they don't seem to have a friendship in the same way that, like, when Robert Baratheon goes to pick Ned Stark, they're old buddies. Like, they fought together. They're good. Viserys in this episode is literally going to say, like, you know, Daemon was the favorite because I was never a warrior. But he's going to say that, right? So, what is their relationship? And they bring up this point that Otto is serving his second king. He was also Hand of the King to Jaehaerys. And so that's kind of why he got the job, right? He had experience on the resume, Mike. So, the fact that they're like not super close, but he's trusted him and is sort of slowly realizing that, like, I trusted you more than I should have. I gave you a long leash and you went a little too far, is coming through here. And I like that point. The point that Viserys is not dumb, that he can see what's happening to him. And that, you know, I think someone pointed this on the Discord that I think what's interesting about this is that, yes, it's this big thing that happens, that Otto discovers this thing happens. And I think for Otto, I don't think that he's somebody who was like, okay, what's my path here? What's my plan to get a grandson on the Iron Throne? But he keeps like being like, things fall into his lap and he knows how to play a card well, right? If he's the hand, he knows how to play his hand. How many of these can we do? How many hand
points? Oh, listen, we have an entire 6 episodes left, okay. Grace. I think we've got a lot in our pockets.
Okay. The king's wife died. I do have a daughter, you know? Okay, that's good. Okay, now she had a son. Okay, yeah. Oh, well, okay, an uncle and niece in a pleasure. Okay, interesting. I mean, he said he played his hand well, but he actually kind of played it poorly, because this is what he's dealt. I don't think that he's not like I'm just going to keep going with the card metaphor. He's not sneaking cards up his sleeve to put them in. This is what he was given. And yet somehow he walks out of this being fired. Right. So,
I think it's interesting because Otto has done a lot of calculating things, as we talked about with Alice and stuff. And as Viserys is going to bring up as well. And, like, in my opinion, one of the least calculating things that he does in this case, which is, like, again, he gets woken up in the middle of the night. It's not like he's like, oh, yes, please send that little prepubescent boy to Flea Bottom to spy on Daemon and Rhaenyra. I know they snuck out.
Yeah.
This is the thing that breaks the back. And I think it's interesting in that, like, it's a fairly innocuous move, but because of all the other shit he had done piled up behind that, that it's almost like, while this, it's odd that this was the incident that breaks everything, like, it doesn't obfuscate the fact that he actually has done a lot of other calculated, I would not say like as depraved as some other hand stuff that has been done, but like still, I think betraying the trust inherently of the king in and of himself, that I think, you know, it's a fun and unexpected way for the character to fall. I would have assumed if Otto Hightower was no longer going to be king, it would have been like, oh, he was caught in this big coup plot or like trying to conspire, putting nightshade in his tea. No, it's just that like this one random time when, again, something that was about to happen was brought to him and he wanted to bring it to the king And it turns out that, like, not only were things turned around, but there was also happened to be a big resume of actually bad crap that he did that ended up being used against him.
The other thing I think is interesting about this is that it's complex in the degree of when Viserys says, Otto, tell me what happened. I need the juicy details, my man. Come on, yeah. Spit them out.
Tell me more. Tell me more.
Yeah, and he's...
Did she bang her uncle?
I want them all in leather jackets. that he's like, do I have to say it? Because what he was hoping to come in here to do was to basically say, yeah, they are in a pleasure house together, you know, because they didn't sleep together, right? This is, yeah. And so he is embellishing, and he does lie, right? Because he says that they do, I believe. I could go back. I'd have to go back and rewatch the language.
He specifically uses the term coupled, like they coupled as a verb.
So he is at least implying, and I think he was kind of hoping he could just get away with like, they're in a pleasure house together. You know what that means. And because they didn't, he's just kind of having to play a little bit more coy. So he's being, and so in this same moment that he is telling Viserys something that's true, he's also lying and again betraying his trust, as you said. So I think that is really interesting, because not only could it be like, yeah, he is the hand of the key, he's kind of doing the hand of the king thing, because couldn't he have just like had this rumor be spread around, right? Could that have, like, is there a different way to go about this? But he does do it in this way of like, no, look, this is my duty, I need to tell you this thing that happened, like, I'm sorry, I need to, like, don't shoot the messenger, but here we go. Unfortunately, the messenger will get shot.
Well, let's talk about a very different Hightower Targaryen scene here, as Alicent is going to go over to Rhaenyra and be like, just looking out for you, BT dubs, my dad has this thing. Is it true? And Rhaenyra's like, what? No, absolutely not. I gotta say, Grace, poor late Emma Targaryen, between last episode, right, with Viserys being like, I swear on your mother's grave, I will never renounce you as heir. And now this time Rhaenyra being like, I swear on my mother's grave that Daemon never touched me. Hasn't this woman been through enough in House of the Dragon?
To be fair, she's not in a grave. They burned her with a dragon. So.
Yeah, technically speaking, I wasn't lying.
There's no grave. So, you know, I wasn't lying. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's interesting, right? Because again, Alicent is going to immediately believe Rhaenyra, and I think part of it is this urgency for companionship that she is going to speak about earlier in the episode. I think leaning upon like the girl that she knew for all these years, that she wanted to believe her side of the story, and a little bit of Rhaenyra like dipping her toes in the dark waters, right? You put about this before, that Rhaenyra seemed to be the most like, you know, good character in terms of all the stuff that she was trying to invoke and work towards and behavioral wise. And now, like, she's lying a little bit, that not only about things that happened to Kristen Cole, but a little bit about what happened with Daemon as well. And she's able to get away with it, exploiting a bit of the position that Alicent finds herself in and that desperation to want to believe Rhaenyra.
Yeah, this show is so interesting that you can go back and forth in different episodes, and you kind of like in these different scenes, you can kind of have sympathy for different people. I think that when we get the reveal of like, and I'm marrying my daughter's best friend, you're like, oh, that Alicent, don't do that. Come on. And you have sympathy for Rhaenyra. And this one, that point of like just wanting sympathy, right? This idea, I think, as I said earlier, that Alicent is just in this now, and there isn't a way, you know, divorce is not common or easy in Westeros, right? So this is just her life now. And I think that she'd almost be happier if Rhaenyra just did what Viserys wants her to do, which is, why don't you pick someone you like, and then we can just like gossip and like rant about our husbands. It's your dad, you know? I feel like she kind of wants someone who's in it with her a bit as well. It does want to be like the queen mother, or you know, the queen regent, whatever she's gonna end up, whatever her title would actually be called. So yeah, this is Rhaenyra's just like, yeah, well, I'm gonna play the game, I'm gonna so,
which again speaks towards that episode 2 quality of, she is much more adept at this than she thought she was,
right?
And probably than a lot of people expected her to be. I know that obviously Viserys is going to choose her, and we're going to have the Song of Ice and Fire invoked once more of like, I trust that you're going to be the person that'll be able to sit on the Iron Throne to unify these kingdoms against this giant threat, or at least maintain the status quo. But like, she's good. She can play the game pretty well here when she wants to. Someone who's in a little bit less of a great state is Daemon. He is walking in a little worse for wear. Looks like he basically like washed up on the shore, like he just came from the Stepstones, and will be brought immediately into the throne room. God, I love the color palette in this, right? Sure, the tight black armaments of Viserys against the stark white shirt of Daemon Targaryen, along with his white hair like strewn across the floor. And especially considering the implications of where may not have been taken, you know, by Daemon of Rhaenyra, I think him wearing white is also a very interesting color choice as well.
Yeah, this scene is great. I like a lot of this. Again, this is, you know, I think that their relationship to me is so interesting. It's so, you know, these two brothers, you know, and him just wanting his attention. And here he has it, as he's just going to get like kicked around on the floor. And I've sort of, you know, been describing Matt Smith's, you know, depiction of Daemon as a little bit like Weasley to a degree. And I feel like this is another moment where like, yeah, he's not just this, like the first time we see him, it's he's with the gold cloaks. He's given them the speech, and they're going to go into Flea Bottom and they're going to do some work. And pretty much everything else, he's sort of been like a little bit cowardly is not the right word, but a little bit like more meek and a little bit like, even though he's this great soldier, you know, he fought in the tournament. Everything since then has just been him as like this, like sort of sad little boy in some ways. Yeah. Yeah.
No, he's not the big bad villain that I think we all made him out to be. Maybe it's just because we were all so infatuated with him in Morbius that we thought he's just keep playing villains. Like, this is a guy that I think he loses much more than he wins.
Has not danced enough in House of the Dragon, I will say. Like, he danced in his last
Do you think
Morbius.
We missed out on that in Flea Bottom of like him dancing along to everyone playing?
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
All right, now here's the next Photoshop job, please. We got such a great, fantastic response for Everybody Loves Daemon from last week. Can someone Photoshop Matt Smith in that infamous scene in Morbius in Flea Bottom, like as a fire dancer?
Yes, please.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if I don't know if it went around on Twitter, but in the Discord, if you're a patron, you could check out a stunning Photoshop of Everybody Loves Daemon by Josiah. It was incredible.
It has, and it just has the entire family in there as well. Agreed. Not just the titular Daemon himself. So it's a very tense scene, but everyone has an angle here, right? And so Daemon is going to claim that he actually did what he didn't do, and he will actually go so forward, Grace, as to say, give me what I want. I gave up my crown and you said I could have one favor. Well, genie, this is my wish. I wish I could bang my niece. Please give me Rhaenyra as a bride. I will bring the House of the Dragon back to its proper glory.
I love this like smarmy little guy just being like, but it's tradition. It's okay. I can marry my family. He's like, you're already married. He's like, yeah, multiple wives, whatever. It's fine. Come on, please. I'll just marry your daughter. Please.
You're the king. Like, you can veto anything that anybody says.
Oh, come on. It's so lame. You want me to marry your daughter, who's also my niece. Come on.
It's very much like that episode of The Simpsons, right? That's a future flash forward of like Lisa becomes president and Bart keeps mooching off of her. Like, that's very much what Daemon's trying to do.
I completely agree. That's great. It's a great comp. Yeah. His request is denied. And Viserys, unsurprisingly, is like, I would like to never see you again. I think we're probably done seeing each other.
To make another comparison for Daemon, I feel like he's slowly becoming like the DJ Jazzy Jeff of this Fresh Prince house, where he keeps getting thrown out of it, right? Like, and every time he says, go back to the Vale, go back and see your wife. And so it very much feels like we're just waiting for Graham McTavish's character to throw him out, a la what Uncle Phil did to, you know, DJ Jazzy Jeff on that show.
Yeah, I don't know if people know. I've read the whole book, and what people should know is that this just keeps happening every time. There's just a different blank feeder. Like, I got to go fight the sheep feeder. And then he goes and he wins that, and he comes back, and then he's like, oh, I'd like to marry my niece. And he's like, no, you're kicked out again. He finds another feeder to beat. Yeah.
And then eventually he has to come up with feeders, right? He's like, that's God, all right, I am the monkey feeder. All right, I'll admit to it. I came up with it so I could find an excuse to come back here. I'll give you my banana crown.
This is the feeder. He feeds on things that feed on other things.
Yeah, I ran out of ideas. I'll be completely honest. After the 17th attempt, brother, please just let me marry my niece.
Please. Yeah.
All right, so we get for this, I feel like, you know, the umpteen time, but I'm loving it, this, like, typical way to end a show, right? Of like our Rhaenyra Viserys check-in. We got one in episode one, episode three. Like, it's an opportunity for these two big bastions of the show to finally check in with one another. Rhaenyra is going to go in and she's going to see Aegon's dagger, right? This is a dagger that was clocked all the way back in the first episode, right? The dagger that's going to be later wielded by Arya Stark against the Night King, with the prophecy engraved into it. We get a name drop of the prince that was promised. Viserys puts this all up to say, remember this shit? It's much bigger than anything you want to be doing in your nighttime.
Yeah, I gave, there's just so much responsibility to this thing that I gave you. Come on, what are you doing? I trusted you. And I do like this, that I think maybe, I don't know how you felt, Mike, but were you kind of expecting that we might end up in a place at the end of the episode where it's like, he should probably name a different heir. And he's not. He promised that she could marry whoever she wanted. And he also said, I'm not replacing you. I'm not trying to replace you. And so, yeah, he's going to renege on one of those things, but seemingly not the other. Rhaenyra is still the heir to the Iron Throne. The point of him being like, yeah, I had to heat up this dagger for a really long time that you could just read it so you knew I wasn't lying.
Yeah, yeah. I really love the choice for the character that you could argue to a point that you illuminated before that you brought up last week, right? Like, is my job at King just to make one person happy and make one person unhappy? That you could argue, okay, does that make him wishy-washy? But again, Viserys went through his own baptism by fire last episode, where I think he does have things that he will put his foot down for. Yep. And I think this idea of this large prophecy, and while he does have a bit of a moment of questioning, right, with Alicent and everything, when he's standing in front of the flames in episode three of like, okay, is pursuing prophecy really the end all be all as to why I should do things? He by and large is going to follow this larger rule of like, I have to do whatever it takes, the means to an end of making sure a capable person sits on that throne for the good of the realm. And I think that is really thrumming through his head as things become increasingly and increasingly complicated. And so I like that about the character, that again, we've talked a lot about, I think, his weaknesses as a ruler, as he says he's not a warrior. He's really not that much of a politician either. I think that's the job of the small council, and especially someone like Otto. But I'm glad that, like, he does have things that he stands for in this case. And granted, it might not be for his own like personal morals. It might more so be to say, hey, I want this thing to happen down the line. But it's cool to see that he does have a line.
Yeah, he says the thing last episode that really stuck with me, which is when Jason Lannister, I don't know if people know this episode, Tywin gets a little more screen time as the on the small council, played by the same actor. But last week, when Jason says, well, I just presumed that Aegon would be named heir at some point. And he says, did you think I just did that on a whim? Like, I just, like, decided? And so I like that this is a thing. Viserys, I think, another character trait I would put on him. He's a little bit stubborn to a degree in terms of he doesn't really like to, when people presume that he has done something completely out of, you know, being pushed by someone, I think. That, yes, he knows that he likes to please people and he wants, you know, opinions from people. But I also think that he does not feel like he ever makes a decision that is completely just, you know, to support one person, right?
Yeah, rash, you know,
yes,
like,
rash, yeah.
That he'd act like Damon does, of just, right, like completely shoots from the hip without thinking.
Yeah, he is. I think he would perceive himself to be rather thoughtful. And this is perhaps the biggest decision he'll make as the king. And this is what he's chosen, is that Rhaenyra is the heir. And so he's going to sort of like call her in and be like, I think you just need to do a little performance check on the goal, you know, the goals we set, which is that you'll be the rightful heir, and make sure that if the long night comes while you're queen, you can handle it.
Yeah. So in this case, again, he does say, okay, good news, you're not losing your job, but, you know, bad news, I'm pretty PO'd at you. And listen, he brings up a line that we talk about all the time in watching reality shows, right? Grace, the truth does not matter, Rhaenyra, only the perception. And again, I think that speaks to a bit of the sheltered aspect of Rhaenyra and how I think maybe Viserys joins a bit of the Daemon perspective of like, I acknowledge that there are, there's the truth and the truth, to quote Lionel Hutz, the big T and the little T. And so he is going to officially declare, you are going to be wedding Laenor Velaryon. Good news. He was flying a dragon like a real badass in the last episode. Like, you're going to love him. You love your dragon.
Yeah.
But he is, you know, a little angry at her. He calls her his political headache. Rhaenyra is going to respond here by just nicely displacing the blame of like, yes, okay, look, this rumor may have come to you, but did you give any thought as to who has been spreading the rumor? Who suggested to you last episode, even though it was a year ago, that I wed a 2-year-old child who happens to be his grandson, who has ruled over 2 different rulers who you may now get in your head possibly try to kill your father in order to become the hand of the king, or at least capitalize on the opportunity? And she planted a Rhaenyra seed, Grace. I gotta give her credit here.
Yeah, I mean, like if I'm going down, I gotta marry Elaine, or you got fired, you gotta fire Otto. I like the line here where it's you will do your duty and you will wed Sir Laenor's. Okay. Well, you must do your duty as the king. You gotta check who's in your ear. And I also love, there's this beat where she says like, it's such BS that like, you know, if I was a man, I could have like 12 bastards out there. Nobody would know. It's like, well, yeah, sorry. But like, you were born a woman, so
yeah. I mean, like, again, look at Robert Baratheon, right? Look at Gendry freaking rowing his way around Westeros.
Yep. But she's like, yeah, it's BS. So she sounds like she's gonna marry Laenor Velaryon. So yeah.
But the good news is she'll be doing it without Otto Hightower looking above her, at least not from his perspective as Hand of the King. As we have a meeting here in the small council room, which I love as well as a choice, right? Because this is where Otto usually wields a lot of his power. We saw it from the very first episode. And this will be the way that Viserys brings down the hammer. He'll first regale him with the story about, again, his father was supposed to be the hand of King Jaehaerys, ends up dying of a burst belly as a result of going on a hunt. And hey, it just so happened that you were named in his stead, and now you're my hand. And he says, you are the man who taught me how to be king. But hey, I noticed a couple things now that 2 and 2 have been put together. After my wife died, did you send your daughter to comfort me in a way to get me to eventually seek her own comfort in hand of marriage, so that you technically marry into my family and have royal blood that you can then put on the throne someday? And again, the thing about Otto that I think it's kind of like a delicious bit of irony is, again, you know, while there was a bit of a twist to what he did, this is the least twisting thing he's done so far on the show. And he has continued to beat this drum, right? Of like, what I did was what was good for the realm. I'm a faithful servant to the crown, no matter what. It makes sense why he served across 2 different kings. And Viserys is like, yeah, that's great and all, but I can never trust your judgment. It's this idea, again, of like less so a betrayal of the royal variety and more so a betrayal of the personal variety.
Yeah, this is like you're too caught up in it now, Otto. I think that, you know, I've married your daughter and maybe you shouldn't be the hand of the king. Probably like, yeah, you ruled for a long time. You were the hand for 2 kings. But yeah, we owe you a debt. But I think you need to retire. This is like, yeah, when someone just won't retire, you know, it's like, please, we need you to leave. I don't think you have, you know, your fastball anymore. So, yeah. I mean, were you expecting sort of this to play out this way? I feel like people kind of thought Otto, yeah, was like the little finger pulling all these strings. And it feels like, okay, fourth episode, he's fired. He's not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, as much as I may have like you know, maybe mocked a bit of like the slow paced nature of this episode, like I will commend them in terms of the overall macro pace of letting go of him. I always thought he'd come careening down, but as I spoke before, I thought it would be something along the lines of like a big conspiratorial plot. But I think almost this is more realistic in a manner of speaking. It's like, you know, Al Capone gets caught for jaywalking and then like all right. the crimes against him right. end up getting built up.
Right.
I think it's a really fun way to undo this character. Now, the big question is like, is the character completely undone? He is still the father of the Queen Regent. I'm assuming they're not just going to like outwardly send him back to Old Town to his home. In fact, in the previews for next week, we do still see him around. So it's clear that like they're not getting rid of him, but removing his power, I think, is the main thing Viserys intends to do here.
Yeah, I think that that is fair. And it kind of puts, I think, Otto on his heels a little bit. I thought it was interesting about this line about who was going to be the Hand of the King, and that it ended up being Otto after Viserys's father had died, and whether there's implication there about how much Otto might have been involved in that.
Right.
So again, I think that this stuff of like, I definitely think that there are things that Otto does sometimes that are like, he puts things in motion to make sure they happen. And sometimes I feel like he has sort of lucked into these things that then he, you know, then tries to manipulate even further, if that makes a sense. But then this line here, and I guess, you know, the idea here may be that like Viserys doesn't even know, but it's just like, but now that you're doing all this, it does make me wonder about how you ended up in the position you were. And again, to the point earlier of like what he says to his daughter in terms of, it doesn't actually matter if you slept together. There's a perception now out there
yep.
that you did. And I think it's like, boy, it really doesn't look good that like he died in a hunting accident. You became the Hand of the King. So I wasn't sure if they were implying that he was involved in that. A la Robert Baratheon ending up.
I was going to say, that's another one that I feel like, though, from the books, and they really underline it more in the shows, but I know at least from the books, they really leave it murky, right? And
right.
the show really underlines, no, it was Cersei who got, you know, one of her lovers to be able to serve as his steward and, you know, poison the wine, et cetera, et cetera. But I feel like that was one of those deliciously ambiguous things. I don't imagine we're ever going to get an answer from it.
Yeah. I would be interested to hear the book club's take on that in terms of like if they reread some of that stuff about that time when Otto becomes the king, if there's anything in there that implies that he did. And I like that you're saying, yeah, I don't think we'll get an answer. I agree. I don't think we will. And that's kind of the point. You only know what you know, right? Like, and this is like a thing like presumably someone would cover up. So if it happened, and if it didn't, there's nothing to cover up, but it seems like he's covering it up, right? So
And not only is history written by the winners, but also the words of history can be range to suit the winner's needs.
That's right.
Too. And I think that's sort of the case that Viserys is making here. So bye-bye Otto, and possibly bye-bye baby, or at least what Viserys is implying here, as Rhaenyra is going to get a knock-knock-knock on the door, kind of like sitting in her, you know, plaintive state, you know, the morning after. And speaking of morning after, she essentially gets a form of that in a form of this tea that is delivered to essentially imply to Rhaenyra, I know I did what I needed to do, but I know that you are lying, that you did not, you know, sleep with somebody last night. And so I want to let you know, A, that I'm watching out for you to not cause you any drama, but like, B, I'm not completely daft and I do see what's going on.
I mean, there's also no, I mean, you say someone, there's no reason for Viserys to think it's anybody other than Daemon, right?
Like, right. Unless we find out later on, he has another similar thing with that of like, no, wait a minute. I did see Kristen Cole's helmet in the bottom of your chambers.
So yeah, presumably this is like, I think Daemon also admits it. And he does, I think we sort of skim past this scene where he's talking with Allison, he says, why would he confess if he didn't do it? And Allison says, to lower your standing as well.
Yeah.
And so I do still think that the fact that Daemon said he did it pretty much, I think, makes Viserys pretty sure that they did it. And so, yeah, he's going to prepare this. I'm interested to see how this, the reaction to this Especially people who, you know, weren't huge fans of episode one. I think that, you know, that being sort of the moment to end the episode, that's the beat that we end on. It's really dark. It's really dark. It's the, you know, to the same issue of episode one, is it is, it's implying here that Rhaenyra doesn't get to choose. She has no choice, no consent in this matter, which is not great. So I will hold out a little bit of my judgment until we see the fallout from it to a degree next week. You know, we don't see her take anything. She just looks at it at the table. So, you know, the options are there. And so again, I haven't watched any of the post stuff of the episode. I know that there was, their defense of like the episode one was like, well, it's a hot button topic at the time, right? Like, you know, this stuff. And so, but it's just, you know, to just like have it there as the beat of like, okay, Rhaenyra, do it. And it just be like dark and sad instead of really seeing what she thinks. It's not landing perfectly for me at the moment, but I always do try to make sure that like, I have not seen a complete story yet. I have seen one episode. This is episode four of a 10 episode series. So, you know, we'll see what next week looks like in terms of like, if there's any continuation of that and how they continue to handle it moving forward. But
yeah, I think it more so serves for me as like a microcosm of where their relationship is at the end of the episode. Right. Which is like, okay, you think you may have gotten one over me, but like, I am watching you. I am your father. I am your king at the end of the day. And it's done in like this incredibly bleak way, right? Of essentially it's handled. I'm cleaning up your mess. And like you said, you have no choice in the matter. So like you said, it's a dark and grim ending to what is an episode that deals with a lot of like dark and grim subject matter. As we're finishing up though, I do want to give a shout out here to Claire Kilner, who is the director of this episode, because while there were some comparisons in terms of like material that has been covered in Game of Thrones, there was obviously a lot of discourse in that show as well about like the kind of exploitative nature of it and like the necessity of it. I know particularly when it comes to like Sansa, you know, in Winterfell back in season six, infamously during those types of things with Ramsay Bolton, that there's certainly, look, is a lot of really uncomfortable stuff that is being discussed and your mileage may vary. But I will say, I think the way she directed a lot of these things did feel like, despite an inappropriate topic on an appropriate scale, I think particularly like the scene between Kristen Cole and Rhaenyra that we've highlighted so much, I think to me felt a bit different than basically honestly any sex scene that we've seen in Game of Thrones, where it did feel loving, it did feel passionate. Now like maybe if we had seen things like, you know, Ned and Catelyn Stark bet each other, for example, like maybe it would be on that similar level of like almost romanticism. It's odd to throw that word in there, but like it almost felt like it in that way, with just the pleasure that they took within each other. But to me it felt filmed distinctly different. And to that point you made earlier about like how much of this Game of Thrones stuff will fly, you know, in our modern day perspective, considering how much has changed. I do think this is something that has been adjusted, perhaps just due to the POV of the director. And from that, I do appreciate.
Yeah, I know like some of the Sansa stuff was also like, yeah, they immediately cut to Theon, right? Like, and it's him like, you know, looking upset about it. And yeah, it's really, I mean, the Allison scene in particular, where she's just like very, like, you know, she's like, well, it is pretty late. It's like, I know, but this is what you have to do. Like, I, on one hand, I was like, the show kind of was like, yeah, we're not doing that anymore. And yet it is kind of in here. Like, there is a very clear argument that, like, she did not consent to that betting with Viserys, right? She was like, yeah, it's really late, you know? And you know, it's not the same as what happens to Sansa, but you know, they're going there. And again, I said this like earlier, like, yeah, I'm not opposed to like stories about what it's, you know, women and their stories and like, and in sometimes being in situations that is really hard and the struggle that women have had to go through for a long time. And that's built into this world due to like the stuff that George R. R. Martin is drawing on. We just need to hear from those people. So, you know, and for the perspective to be on them. And to be fair, like that's that scene is mostly her, but I still could see that it won't work for a lot of people. I think it's a great shout out to talk about Claire Kilner. She is also directing next week's episode as well. And I don't know if this is just a placeholder or not, but I am seeing that she might be directing episode 9, which I feel like Game of Thrones set the standard of like, it's not 10 that's the big bang, it's episode 9. So that is exciting to me as well, that she is the one who potentially is helmed for that one. It could just be a placeholder on IMDb. She's definitely doing next week's episode.
Yeah, so next week, we light the way, but it's going to be a different we next week, actually, because next Sunday, I'm going to be, fittingly for Game of Thrones, attending a wedding.
Uh-oh.
God, I hope it's okay.
Yeah, there's so many things that, I hope go okay, which is, who's being married to each other, that nobody gets murdered. You know,
I will wear chainmail underneath my suit. I will not drink any wine. I've come up with my own checklist as to what not to do at weddings when it happens on a Sunday night. But I will be unfortunately missing from the recap podcast. But I have someone serving in my stead in this trial by combat. It's a very familiar voice because you hear him on the other three House of the Dragon podcasts here on Post Show Recaps. Josh Wigler is going to sub in for me to talk with Grace. And I'll be doing a little bit of a Freaky Friday swap with him. I think I'm going to be on particularly the Versus podcast next week. So, yeah, Josh and I are going to be doing a bit of a switcheroo. Very grateful for Josh for subbing in for me. But, yeah, I'll miss being able to do this live. But I do think, Grace, being able to talk you through this episode, I certainly, again, have a lot of appreciation for it. I'm still of a couple minds as to like whether I want to necessarily go back and watch it. But I think, as an episode of television, as a character study, you know, as a study in a subject like sex and how it interacts within this particular culture within, you know, the Westerosi society, I've really enjoyed the opportunity to get to talk about it. I hope other people appreciate it as well. I imagine people would be of a lot of different minds watching this episode. And so I hope we were able to like represent some state of your mind out there over the course of this podcast.
Yeah, it's a tough one. It's very dark. And again, this is what the show is a little bit. My good friend Ariel, who I do Post Recaps Theater with, whenever we come out of a movie, it was like, was it good? Was it boring? No, it was not boring. The worst thing for a podcast is a boring episode of television. And so I don't think what we had was boring, whether people liked it or not. It'll be interesting to sort of see what the week looks like on Twitter, in the Discord, and of course, our plethora of podcasts that will be covering the episode. But I think this will be a divisive one to a degree. I thought it was strong. I think there's so much character stuff in here, even if the character development is like, I want to sleep with my uncle. But, you know,
it's character development.
That's the show. That's the show, baby.
So, yeah, as Grace talked about, of course, we have our usual slate of shows coming up in just a couple days. It's going to be Josh, Rich, and Taryn doing the book club from the perspective of people who have read A Song of Ice and Fire, specifically Fire and Blood. As we mentioned before, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of interesting points to compare it to, considering from what I have heard, the depiction of these types of rumors within the books and how they played out, I'm sure they have thoughts. As usual, Rob and Josh are going to be recording their feedback show. Make sure you send in your feedback because, again, I'm sure y'all have thoughts. GOT@postshowrecaps.com. And then this weekend, Josh, LaTanya, and maybe a special guest might be there for another Versus podcast comparing House of the Dragon episode 4 with Game of Thrones episode 4. I'm imagining they're going to be a bit different in terms of tone, but who knows? Maybe it was a surprisingly dark episode 4 of Game of Thrones as well. Other than that, Grace, you mentioned Post Show Recaps Theater. Talk about all the other things you have going on.
Yeah, Post Show Recaps Theater, we cover the biggest and best movies. We should have a Pinocchio pod coming out.
Soon. I don't know if that falls in the category of biggest and best movies, unfortunately.
I don't know. I don't. I'm not sure what Tom Hanks is doing these days. But again, not boring. Between this and Elvis, and also I we're trying to figure out some scheduling. Ariel's very excited. A Barbarian is a movie. Skarsgård plays a bad guy. It's a horror movie. It looks really fun. And hopefully we'll be able to find some coverage after a bit of a slow August. I think it'll be a very eventful September movie wise. So I'm excited for what we have coming. I just wrapped up a few shows. A League of Their Own, The Sandman we wrapped up, and What We Do in the Shadows. Antonio Mazzaro joined Lindsay and I, and it was an absolute treat. Always fun to chat about TV with Antonio over on the Reality TV Wrap Ups, so the Off Speed podcast, and launched a new show over on Rob as a Podcast on the YouTube channel, and we'll also be doing some live Twitch games. It's called Roll Call, Mike, and we play board games with podcasters. Oh. We played Settlers of Catan. We got Rob into his Catan phase. And so, yeah, you can check that. Lots of deals and trades and proposals. So I feel like there's some House of the Dragon like a crossover there. It's a game, you know. It's a
hopefully
game.
No marriage packs though. Like, give me your sheep and I'll marry you.
Well, I did try to arrange a betrothal with some of their. I mean, only Rob is a parent. So yeah, my firstborn. You know, I offered up, but no, he declines. Anyway, we're gonna do that once a month. We'll play a different board game with a different group of podcasters. I'm very excited for that. And I'm on Twitter at Hi From Grace.
All right, you can follow me at a Mike Bloom type. You said, and I agree with you, Grace, like, better bad than boring. Unfortunately, Josh McClure and I brought back Down the Hatch to talk about, in my opinion, maybe the least interesting piece of pop culture I've seen in a while. Matthew Fox's blasé return to television in Last Light, a 5-episode series on Peacock. Josh and I have revived the engine of Down the Hatch into its third state, using this as a bit of a warm-up to get into our newest project, which we're going to announce next week. But this is a little bit of like a lost crossover. We watched it so you don't have to. And so we give it the whole rundown as to the show, and also had a lot of fun along the way talking about very stupid things. You can check that out. Of course, Rings of Power aired its third episode. I continue to just gawk at the screen like it's a brand new beast brought in front of me. It is so ungodly beautiful. And there's some fun character stuff in there as well. We got into Numenor, the Island of Men, where there's a lot of political intrigue happening there as well. And so myself and Rich are covering that. And then on the reality TV side of things, this will be the last time I'm talking House of the Dragon before Survivor 43 premieres on September 21st. If you want to know who's who, I got a lot for you. I've got like 7.5 hours of talking with Rob about it. I've got 18 written interviews up at parade.com. So if you're into a very different type of island than the Stepstones, feel free to check that out. We're winding down coverage of Big Brother 24, of the Challenge USA, of Survivor South Africa. We'll be talking a bit Amazing Race as well. So yeah, I mean, to your point, Grace, even outside of the box office, like, it is hopping in September. Yep. And House of the Dragon is going to be included. So we cap off the first half of season one of House of the Dragon next week with episode 5, We Light the Way. What happens to
We
Otto?
Last Light the Way. Is that
exactly
right?
We Last Light the Way, where Matthew Septon Fox is going to show up and be like, all right, there's a problem with the oil. The problem with the wildfire. It's igniting all at the same time. So hopefully it's a low bar to clear, but I think it will clear it. And my partner who watched all of Last Light alongside me, Josh Wigler, will be back in my stead alongside Grace to talk about that. Thank you all so much for listening. Grace, fantastic work as per usual.
You too, Mike.
Listen to all the rest of the podcast going on this week about episode 4 of House of the Dragon. Until next time, take care. Bye-bye.